Chapter 30, Altered States, Summer 1966, The Spirit of the Times. General Motors hired investigators to question over 50 friends of Ralph Nader, seeking to discredit the young consumer advocate. Down in Georgia, the legislature refused to seat Julian Bond, a 25-year-old black activist whose election platform included opposition to the Vietnam War. Anti-war Senator Fulbright of Arkansas was accused by Republican Party leader Barry Goldwater of giving, quote, aid and comfort to the enemy. Now, this confused many of us who assumed and firmly believed that the Republican Party was the enemy. During August, 4,000 Chicago whites attacked 600 blacks marching with Dr. Martin Luther King to end segregation. The publicity attending these events and hundreds like them contributed to a climate of controversy. Throughout the land, anti-drug people, politicians, police officers, psychiatrists popped up to denounce LSD and marijuana as the most dangerous threats ever confronted by the human race. This sort of propaganda was guaranteed to create mass hysteria and to sow the seeds of bad setting and set. I flew into corrective action, giving public lectures and interviews and writing magazine articles that outlined the need for guidance, preparation, protected settings, and knowledge of centering techniques to deal with trip confusions. Few of these communications reached the national press. Some counseling in understanding media was clearly indicated. My lunch with Marshall McLuhan at the Plaza was informative. He said, "Dreary Senate hearings and courtrooms are not the platforms for your message, Timothy. You think of yourself as a philosopher. Fine. But the key to your work is advertising. You are promoting a product. Your product is the new and improved accelerated brain. You must use the most current tactics for arousing consumer interest. Associate LSD with all the good things that the brain can produce. Beauty, enlightenment, fun, philosophic wonder, religious revelation, increased intelligence, mystical romance. Word of mouth from satisfied consumers will help, but get your rock and roll friends to write jingles about the brain." Then Marshall McLuhan hummed, "Lysergic acid hits the spot, 90 billion neurons, that's a lot. Get the idea, Timothy?" "The problem is tricky," I said. "The opposition beats us to the punch. The psychiatrists and the police propagandists have already stressed the negative. Now, this can be dangerous when the mind is re-imprinting under LSD. These anti-drug people are deliberately provoking bad trips. They never mention the 99 good experiences. They keep repeating, 'LSD, jump out a window.' Now, when some ill-prepared person goes spinning into new realms, he or she wonders, 'Hey, what happens now? Oh yeah, jump out a window.' It's like the over-solicitous mother who warns her kids not to push peanuts up their noses." "Exactly," agreed McLuhan. "That's why your advertising must stress the religious. Find the God within. You know, this is all frightfully interesting. Your competitors are naturally denouncing the brain as an instrument of the devil. That's priceless. Timothy, to dispel fear, you must use your public image. You are the basic product endorser. Whenever you are photographed, smile, wave reassuringly, radiate courage. Never complain or appear angry. Oh, it's all right if you come off as flamboyant and eccentric. You're a professor, after all. But a confident attitude is the best advertisement. You must be known for your smile." The waiter, who seemed to be hanging on McLuhan's words, knocked my champagne glass into my lap. McLuhan looked at me expectantly. So what did I do? I smiled. "You're going to win the war, Timothy, eventually, but you're going to lose some major battles on the way. You are not going to overthrow the Protestant ethic in a couple of years. This culture knows how to sell and profit from fear and pain. Drugs that accelerate the brain can't be accepted until the population is geared to computers. Psychedelic drugs are food for the brains of the information world. So you're ahead of your time. They'll attempt to destroy your credibility. It's incredibility that I'm after, I replied. And so that's how it's happened. Step by step, from the Harvard firing to the deportations, from Laredo to the Liddy raid, I was pushed from scientific detachment and scholarly retirement into public opposition to the policies of the ruling regime. By this time, I no longer regretted being an outcast. As a matter of fact, I was beginning to enjoy the fray. And I was not alone in the rebellion. Millions of Americans, exactly at this time, were also pushed to open resistance to the group that had taken over Washington after the Kennedy assassination. A cultural revolution was brewing. My understanding of the situation was this. America was experiencing a quantum jump in intelligence. For the first time in our history, a large and influential sector of the populace was coming to openly disrespect institutional authority. Not as members of organized dissident groups or partisan political groups, but as intelligent individuals, highly selective political consumers who demanded responsive and effective leadership, which no existing party, no religion, no labor union seemed able to provide. Thus, a conflict between the old industrial society and the new information society was to be played out in the new arena of power, the media, communications. Those who understood this would create the future. One morning, while I was ruminating in the shower about what kind of slogan would succinctly summarize the tactics for increasing intelligence, six words came to mind. Dripping wet, with a towel around my waist, I walked to the study and wrote down this phrase, turn on, tune in, drop out. Later, this motto became very useful in my function as a cheerleader for change. Turn on meant to go within, to activate your neural and genetic equipment, become sensitive to the many and various levels of consciousness and the specific triggers that engage them. Drugs were one way to accomplish the end of turning on. Tune in meant interact harmoniously with the world around you, radiate, shine on, externalize, materialize, express your new internal perspectives. Dropout suggested an active, selective, graceful process of detachment. Detachment from involuntary or unconscious commitments. Dropout meant self-reliance, a discovery of one's own singularity, a commitment to mobility, choice, and change. In public statements, I stressed that the turn-on, tune-in, drop-out process must be continually repeated if one wished to live a life of growth. Unhappily, my explanations of the sequence of personal development were often misinterpreted to mean get stoned and abandon all constructive activity. The Canadian Broadcasting Company invited me to Toronto for a nationwide talk show. After the taping, I went to Marshall McLuhan's for a long, genial dinner. He was very proud of what I was doing. But the next day, as I walked off the return plane at LaGuardia, two federal agents were waiting for me. They informed me that narcotics offenders were required to fill out a special form upon leaving the country. More nationwide publicity and another 5-year sentence to contest.